There is a bar on Wilshire here in L.A., not too far from the radio station, called Spare Tire Kitchen and Tavern. You can find me there some nights. It's a good little neighborhood spot. Pizza, beer on the weekends or after work, and then weekend nights, Fridays, Saturday nights, they get pretty busy.
Crazy. You know, it's an eight-hour shift and nonstop rush from beginning to end.
Angel Aguilar, bartender there, on his feet a lot. Here's how you can help him out. Know what you want when he asks.
You know, they come up to you and it's like, what do you need? And then they're like, what do you recommend? And that's one of the funniest questions. It's like, I like whiskey. And they're like, I hate whiskey. It's like, why'd you ask me?
Yeah, we've got all these different tastes. We've got all these different choices. So I get to thinking while I'm sitting there the other night, how long have we been doing this? Going to bars? Why do we drink what we drink? And are we ever going to get a hangover cure? I've got questions. Yeah, sit down, pour something. It's been a long week. Or put in the earbuds as you walk to the Bottomless Mimosa Brunch. And really, you should just end up getting bottomless, because if you get more than two, it's going to end up being the same price anyway. Just trying to save you some money. My name's Mike. Hello again. Today, it's questions about alcohol.
Yes, humans do seek out, you know, psychoactive substances of all kinds, including alcohol. And alcohol is an easy one because it happens without us. So it'll happen if you just leave fruit juice out in the sun for a while.
Adam Rogers wrote the book Proof, The Science of Booze. It sits on my bookshelf. And to condense all the work that he did, yeast is a sort of fungus. It does this magical thing of turning sugar into alcohol. And along the line somewhere, we figured that out. And it makes sense that we did, because we may not be the only ones that know.
There are beach resorts where there are a lot of monkeys around, and they'll come and like steal people's drinks, you know, their pina coladas or whatever. Elephants eating berries or fruit that is fermented on the tree and then kind of running rampant through a village. The question that researchers always ask about those is whether the animals sought out either the flavor of the fermented fruit or the experience of it, or if they just accidentally ate it.
Does the elephant like to go and get drunk?
Yes, that's right. Putting it more succinctly, does it like it or did it just happen by accident?
Which, he notes, is the same question we can actually ask of some of our friends. But if this is just for us, you know, humans, how far back can we go?
The first evidence, I think the oldest ones are about 8,000 years now, somewhere between 8 and 10,000 years. I actually held in my hand a shard from a pot found in China that was at the time the oldest evidence of human beings intentionally manufacturing something alcoholic. And it was made from hawthorn fruit, which was a relative of the apple. And nobody knows whether it was used for ritual purposes or for celebration or just to have a drink at the end of the day.
Were you nervous holding that? Or were they nervous when they gave it to you?
Super nervous. Yeah, I put on gloves and he handed it to me and he stood very, very close.
All right, so jury's out on whether this was for some sort of ceremony or whether people just liked it.
Yeah, I would add even a third use, which is that because alcohol will kill microbes, you know, swab the site of your COVID vaccination with alcohol before you give the shot. A beer with a very low alcohol, 2% or something, is healthier than the water around you.
Which, if you're a listener to the pod, you've heard someplace else already. The Breakfast Show, I think. Same idea in people going to work a little bit buzzed because coffee and tea weren't readily available yet. So it was beer. They were drinking beer. Why do we drink what we drink? Is there like an alternate reality where Americans are drinking sake instead of beer and whiskey?
Well, I can give you the counterfactual that doesn't exist anymore, which is that the alcohol of choice in the American colonies was cider, not beer. The whole story of Johnny Appleseed, of the guy who's going around planting different varieties of apples, they weren't planting them because they were making apple pie. They were making that into cider, into the hard cider, you know, an alcoholic version. And that sort of went away as a different wave of immigrants came and as they started growing grains. So in the U.S., it could have been cider turned into beer. You know, grapes, probably because grapes are really hardy. They'll grow on other crops. So you can grow grapevines on other things. They were easy. So you had them there. It could have been coconuts. You know, it could have been mangoes or something if the Pacific Islanders had gotten interested in it instead.
If it was mangoes, would we describe it the same way that we talk about wines with all these different terms?
It's really interesting. What the research says is that what sommeliers are very, very good at is not necessarily having a more heightened sense of taste or smell, but having descriptors, words available to them. There's a lot of research in this in terms of talking about colors, too. My more recent book is about color, so this is why it's on my mind.
It's called Full Spectrum, How the Science of Color Made Us Modern. It also sits on my bookshelf, so wait a while and we'll end up doing a color show Some of you have been asking about red lights and green lights and red for bad and green for good. But back to this one.
If you say, well, this glass of whiskey is good or bad, that's kind of saying, is this a dark color or a light color in a way? Versus being able to describe a whiskey as being sort of smoky and having some tannic flavors. The flip side of that, though, is that it's very easy to incept people with those.
So yeah, if I gave somebody white wine and had them taste it and describe it, and then I dyed it red, are they going to tell me it's different?
Which is a very famous study that actually happened. And yes, people will. Where they actually gave people a white wine and asked them to describe it, and people used words that you would typically associate with a white wine.
Then they literally dyed it and brought it back out, and the people said it was completely different. So when you're out wine tasting and they come to the table, say this.
Wait, stop. Let me taste it first and then tell me before you incept me with flavors of slate and loam.
Back to spare tire here for just a second, because we're past the halfway mark and it's time for another round, obviously, and because we've got one more thing that was promised at the top of the show, and that's hangovers.
Yeah, a hangover feels really, really bad. And I think there are multiple explanations that people come up with to why they feel so bad.
Dr. Nicole Van Groningen, internal medicine physician at Cedars-Sinai here in Los Angeles. I called her to figure out what's going on when this happens to us, because it's all over, right? Headaches, stomach aches. It feels like the flu.
And it's a patchwork of things, actually. It's not just one thing that causes a hangover. I think a lot of people think of it in terms of dehydration is the biggest thing, electrolyte imbalances. Those are parts of it. But one thing you actually brought up, which is so spot on, is what's the relationship to inflammation? So it looks like, from what we can tell from these studies, that binge drinking actually releases a lot of inflammatory compounds called cytokines. And that's really what makes people feel like almost flu-like, like you mentioned.
And then the other stuff, being dehydrated, not having eaten enough, maybe, that just makes it worse. So what do you do when you get up and it's terrible? She says, stay away from Tylenol if the alcohol is still in your system. Toxic effects on the liver increased. If you're in the in-between period, Aleve, Advil, reach for those.
Although those can be irritating to the stomach lining. So if you're really nauseous, having a lot of stomach pain, you may not tolerate those as well.
It's a vicious cycle.
Yeah, it's a vicious cycle. Exactly.
Okay. Cure. You can scroll social media. You see stuff people want to sell you. My friend used to swear by milk thistle, would hand those out before we even went out. Does any of that work, or are we just really down to like making sure you stay hydrated?
You're asking the exact right question, and it's more the latter. Have a drink and have a glass of water. That's really all we know that's going to help. These supplements and home remedies, all the stuff that you're going to see ads for on Instagram, really do not have good scientific evidence to prove that they work. I've heard about the milk thistle thing too. I think there was a time in my younger life when I took milk thistle, and maybe it has some placebo effect at best.
Because look, if they had found the cure, we would definitely know by now. They'd be making a whole bunch of money. And also, maybe out there in the medical world, there's some reluctance to go searching for one.
Yeah, that's probably true too. We don't necessarily want to be like, as a public health system, oh, we have the cure for hangovers, so let's just totally give the okay to drinking because we can make you feel better on the back end. It's carbs and salt. Really, that's the best cure. And time.
And a hamburger. It's your excuse to go and eat a hamburger. Dr. Nicole Van Groningen, Cedars-Sinai. Adam Rogers, author of Proof, The Science of Booze, and Full Spectrum, How the Science of Color Made Us Modern. That's the time for today. Send me more topics. I've got questions at audacy.com, AUDACY. Say hello if you see me at the bar. I tip in $2 bills sometimes. It's kind of like my signature. We'll talk about those someday. We love a $2 bill.